everybody. Welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush, recorded live at the SAE Institute.
I can hear a heartbeat from 1,000 miles. And the heavens open every time that she smiles. And when I come to her, that's where I belong. Yet I'm running into her like a river song. She gave me love, 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 love. Crazy love. She gave me love, 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 love. Crazy love. Fine sense of humor when I'm feeling low down. And when I come to her when the sun goes down, takes away my heartache, takes away my grief, and takes away my trouble in the night like a thief. She gave me love, 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 love. Crazy love. She gave me love, 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 love. Crazy love. And I need her in the daytime. And I need her in the night. And I wanna throw my arms around her. Kiss and hug her, and kiss and hug her tight. And when I'm returning from so far away, give me some sweet loving to brighten up my day. And it makes me righteous, and it makes me whole. And it makes me mellow down into my soul. She give me love, 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 love. Crazy love. She give me love, 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 love. Crazy love. She give me love, 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 crazy love. She give me love, 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 crazy love.
Yes! Yeah, that was crazy.
Thanks.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
This is my double entendre. Yeah. This is my give back. This is my creative
tying
give back
all
to
full
you.
Circle. Yeah. Hey, I'll take it, man.
Wow.
I'll take it.
Actually, how are you feeling, Miguel? You feel good?
That was great.
James Thanks, Landman, guys. Say hello.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, good.
Stoked to be here on
how
Innovation
you doing?
Crush. God, I'm flattered you are having me on here.
I'm flattered you actually made it here.
Yeah, I'm amazed I made it.
You took time out of your extremely busy schedule.
It's all good. It was on the way to Arizona.
All right. So in case you guys are tuning in for the first time, shame on you. You should have been listening a long time ago.
Seriously.
But if you are tuning in for the first time, this show covers all things innovation, creativity, smart people doing smart things. And not only is this guy beautifully silky voiced, he's also very smart and creative. So James, Jimmy, Jimbo.
Whatever you want.
Jamboree.
I'll take Jamboree.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm just going to go by that now.
Yeah, I like it.
No last name.
give us the 101 on who you are and what you've been up to.
Okay, I'm a singer-songwriter originally from San Francisco, California. I've lived in a lot of random places, been pursuing music in different capacities for the last 10 years, which has led to some living in some crazy places. I lived in New York for a while, London for a little bit. Italy for a time, LA, Seattle, most recently New York. And I guess the story in a bottle is basically, thanks. 3 years into living in New York, which is an amazing city, and I don't think I'll ever get enough of it. I was doing all this side work to pursue a music career, to keep myself afloat, because music never really pays the rent. So I was doing graphic design and web development. So I was coding and doing all these other jobs. And after 3 years in New York, I was just kind of tired of not doing music and tired of the guitar taking a backseat to work on the computer.
Yeah.
So I tried to come up with a way to do music full time immediately. I'm not really like, you know, I'm not famous in America. But
well, you are now.
Just kidding. Thank you.
Thank you. You're internet famous.
This is great. That's fantastic.
For 17 listeners.
Like I said, I'll take it. I'll take anything I can get at this point. But yeah, no, I mean, as an unknown, I was like, how do I do music full time? And I just was like, I got to lower my burn rate so I don't have to do secondary work to support myself. And how do I do that? And the answer was to move across country, buy a van, convert it into a home on wheels and studio on wheels, and just start playing in people's living rooms immediately. Because I figured if I showed up in a living room, you know, the person having the show would invite 25 to 50 of their friends, and that'd be 50 people who had never heard me before. And rather than, you know, the venue hustle where they're like, bring out 100 people. And you're like, I'm not from Northern Michigan.
You know? Otherwise, you owe us money.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, I'm the talent.
Like, I don't understand. What are you hiring me to do? You're not hiring me?
That's a hustle in and of itself.
Tell me about it.
How much do people charge you to book people in their living? No, just kidding. So, I mean, that's great. Where did the idea for that come from? Because, you know, I know a lot of art, like, there's a shitload of artists in the world. And, you know, I look at any YouTube on any given day or SoundCloud or whatever. Everybody's trying to cut through the clutter. And totally. What attracted me to this was that it was such a easy, like, I love ideas when I go like, why didn't I think of that, right? Like, it's easy, but no one's really done it. Like, where what was the mechanic where you go like, that's gonna be the thing?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because I think, you know, for a long time I over-engineered things. You know, I thought like a lot of people do. You need a label, you need, you know, just someone to come reach out of the sky and pluck you out of obscurity. And then I got more zen about it, and I was like, I don't need that. Like, I just need a small group of people who really like what I do enough to let me do it full time. And so that made it a lot simpler. You know, I was like, I just got to get, I mean, if what I'm doing is working, if every once in a while I play and somebody says that was awesome, I just need to find those people. And the fastest way for me to do that was literally to just get on the ground and just start playing as much as possible. So I was like, I'm going to do 100 shows in 2017. They're all going to be kind of DIY, come one, come all, meet as many people as possible and just play. And, you know, the thing about this is that, like, I don't know if this is the right way to do it. You know, these shows are free too, by the way. Like,
right.
they're free to have. So the only way I'd make money is by guest donations. So I'm just like, pay whatever you want, because I'm trying to eliminate all barriers for people to be able to find me and hear my music. But I lost my train of thought.
No, I mean, just being out, like, where did the idea and the mechanic come from for doing that? But I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Is being in front of people like this in a really intimate way.
Yeah, just kind of action, right? I think I got to this point after a long time, and I was just like, action trumps perfection every time. And
actually, look at the top of my notes. Action trumps perfection.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like, you know, I joined a cult, but like, that's literally my new mantra, because for so long I didn't put out material because it just wasn't there. It wasn't perfect. And I got hung up on that. And now, you know, I put out a live album and it's really rough around the edges. And everything I do now is just with an acoustic guitar. It's super raw. It's just, you know, if I fuck up, everyone hears it.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say fuck up?
Yeah. But now you are.
Okay.
No, it's funny, because that was going to lead me to my next thing. Because I think with the live show, right, you there is this, like, almost like comedy of errors. And when I did get a chance to see you, there were kids there, and, like, you edited some things. But it was also like, what am I going to do next, right? Like, and I think you get to practice action trumps perfection.
Totally.
In that environment.
Absolutely. I mean, what's nice about it is that it's, like, it's really ephemeral. Like, nobody's going to remember if I made, like, a huge fuck-up, you know, on a night. And no one's going to remember if I did the wrong thing. They'll just get a general idea. And if they leave that party with, you know, or even in memory, even a week later, being like, that was really cool, that was a lot of fun, then it's a win for me, you know?
Why does it work with you? Because, like, you're super approachable. You're tall, handsome, strapping young lad.
Thank you.
What are you, 6'4"? Six?
Yeah.
Oh,
nice,
wow.
Dude. Former anesthesiologist.
Exactly.
6'4", 220 pounds.
I looked at you so long. When, like, he must be 6'4".
Like, that's a guy who's 6'4".
That is a 6'4" man. No, but, like, even in this environment, right, I walk in, I had no idea it was you that was performing. Like, you totally, like, blended in, were, like, super personable. Like, you know, what is your own sort of approach and personality when you enter someone's home like that?
Well, that's been funny, honestly, because a lot of people look at me and think that, by the way I act, that I'm an extrovert. And it's funny. My older brother's the extrovert in the family. I'm not. I'm a high-functioning introvert. Like, I literally, you know, at those parties, it's funny. I'll talk to, like, 50 people, and at the end of it, I just will go in my van and shut the door and be like, oh, my God. You know, silence.
Sorry, just bawling.
You know, you just start crying, you know, and curl up and rock back and forth. But it's funny. Like, this is really I knew this would be good for me. I also have this sort of policy in life where if I'm afraid to do something, I just make myself do it and jump in until I'm better at it. And socializing is one of those things where I'm just like, God, what am I going to do? Just going into these houses. Sometimes I don't know people that well. Like sometimes they're friends and family friends and friends of friends. But, you know, there's been times where people have booked me and I'm just, I have no idea who they are. Like I'm playing this like 100 to 200 person show in the middle of Washington and I don't know the people. And it's, I'm super excited about it. But
right.
It's always, every single night is different. And that's part of what keeps it interesting too. Oh, that's what I was going to say with that train of thought I lost was that with this model, even if it doesn't work, I always tell people if worse comes to worse, like I'm spending a year on the road doing what I love and seeing the country. So
yeah.
It's a win-win for me. That was like the heart of the business model was like, you know, I'll come away with inspiration and content for days, even if I don't become a billionaire, you know,
right.
which I'm banking on, you know.
Yeah, you know, you should become a billionaire.
That's... Billionaire just like one day at a time. $1 $5 tip at a time.
Exactly. One cash-filled guitar case. You're like the desperado of banking.
Exactly.
I told you, it's my guitar. now I lost my train of thought. No, I love that. I just, you know, I love the fact that it's these intimate showcases. What's been, I guess, the best moment that you remember and the worst moment and the weirdest moment?
Oh, God, man, that's a super tough call. I think the worst moment was walking into or playing a show. There was one show where, and this has been my fault. I took the blame for this. I've since published a manual that explains, you know, how these work. Basically, the trade-off for me doing a free show where people can pay whatever they want is that people have to listen. So the worst show is when this group of people just kind of had me play in the background and nobody listened, which really sucked. So I was like, wow, I'm not getting paid and nobody's listening because they thought I was background music. But that was, again, that was my fault. And that host was actually super gracious and ended up paying me afterwards. You know, in the moment when I thought, holy shit, I'm playing a free show and nobody's listening, like joke's on me, I got to change this up a little bit. That was probably the low moment. And if that's the low moment, that's not even that
bad.
I mean, honestly.
I thought somebody would put some in your tea or whatever.
Yeah, the worst moment was when I was on acid.
Exactly.
And I thought I was playing a house concert, but I wasn't at all. I was actually at Disneyland. I think the best moment, it's weird because some of the better moments I've found have not been like super obvious. It's like a feeling when I leave.
Right.
Where I just feel really taken care of by people. Like, and so I guess that's sort of a, I don't know, like a woo-woo answer to that question, but I...
No, it's great. It's really building relations. And that's, again, that's kind of just me outside looking in and watching you interact and like really building relationships. And,
yeah.
And I think that's far more valuable than, you know, a million YouTube views.
Totally. That's what I would much rather have like one amazing friend than like a million, you know, good time Charlies.
And I think if, you know, from my perspective as a marketer, whatever you want to call me, like when we look at what influencers are, right? Like
yeah.
it's about the relationship, not about the mass reach, right? It's that ability to like drive passionate people and let them be your brand ambassadors. And I believe a lot of your shows are word of mouth, right?
Totally. And that was also kind of built into the model. You know, after a while, especially with shows, like when we played traditional venue shows, when I was in my old band, we hustled so hard and we were always harassing friends to come out to shows. And I hated that. Like I hate treating friends like a head, you know?
Yeah. And especially in the same city, right?
In the
you're
same
like,
city.
You're like, Tuesday night again, guys.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's the worst.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's the return on investment, like, financially and personally is horrible. So I also got to this point where I was like, I just want to find people that really love what I do. Because I had this record executive, I had a meeting with him. This is towards the end of my naive phase, like right before I moved to New York, who was like, you know, he was at a pretty big label in New York and he was just like, the sound you're trying to do, this old school R&B sound, it's like, it's too old school. He's like, you need to like edgify it up a bit. And he's like, it's not going to work, the sound you're doing. And I was like, what about Mayer Hawthorne? He's like, well, he's an exception to the rule. And I'm like, what about Amy Winehouse? You know, I'm like naming all these people that, you know, or Lauryn Hill, who like fused like hip hop and the doo-wop sound. And it was just like incredible, you know? And he was just like, no, that none of that will work. And I think at that moment, I was just like, you know what? I don't need to, I mean, I don't mean this in like a arrogant way. Like I definitely need to win people over, but I don't need to win people over who aren't on board with what I'm doing. And if I can just find the people who are on board, like I'll take a five of them over, you know, 100 people who are just kind of like, oh, this is nice. This is a pretty sound, you know?
You've said this a few times, just this idea of a business model, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people readily associate that phrasing with a traveling artist and his band.
I know, right? For sure.
And his band,
So
where does that, where does the business acumen come from? Is it just from basic need, or was it, you know, did it evolve over time? Like, where did that come from?
No, I think it came from, you know, I ran my own freelancing graphic design and development business for a while. And I started seeing a lot of parallels between what I wasn't doing in music and what I was doing for that, to get new business. And, you know, the old cliche is so true. It just seems that it falls on deaf ears with musicians a lot of times. I think they don't approach their music like a business. And I'm not the type of person to be so self-righteous that I'm like, screw. I mean, I know I just said screw people who aren't on board with what I'm doing. But, you know, I'm also, you know, want to survive and I want to make this work, right? So I'll adjust this model. But yeah, like coming up with a business model in the first place, coming up with a plan was a game changer for me. Because before this, it was just 110% hustle and really zero business sense. Like when I used to be in the band, we'd book tours that made no sense. Right. It'd be like, it's like glorified joyrides, right? We'd burn through Kickstarter money, which is it's just bad. It's just like it's not sustainable to raise money from people and then just kind of blow it on a tour where you just look cool, but because you're playing all these places, but you're not growing as a business. So
right.
I was like, you know, now I just want to play a small place. Like if I play a venue show, I want to play a small one and pack it out. I don't want to try to like play the big rooms and brag about playing this huge venue and then fill it like a quarter of the way.
Yeah.
It's just, for me now, it's just all about aiming to kill every time. And even if that's small, like
yeah.
I just humble myself to the very, very bottom and grow up from there, you know?
Well, even, you know, what I thought was also interesting and funny was you have a one sheet. Like, it's like, here's how you deal with me.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Totally.
Walk us through a couple of the points on that sheet, the rules of engaging James Lamon in your home or venue.
Well, the first rule is that if it's a free show, you know, people have to listen. That was the biggest thing. It's so funny. I had a lot of musicians tell me, you shouldn't play for free. You're undervaluing our music, you know? And I'm like, well, when I'm in a bar and, you know, two people are listening and 200 people are just drinking and talking over me, I would actually just rather have people listen to me, even if I'm not making that much money, and hear what I'm doing, because I have a better chance of winning them over and getting into my music. So that's the first golden rule, is that, like, your guests can talk. I'm pretty chill, but, like, this isn't a background performance. You know, I had some guy yell out one of my shows. He goes, "This isn't a cafe," to all the people behind him. It was super funny. But I'm like, I need the host to tell their friends, like, look, this is a special 45-minute moment. It's not that long. I don't want to bore people. I don't want to make them sit there for 2 hours. Invite people who are into music. Invite people who can listen. And, you know, this isn't a background thing. If you want background music, that's a flat rate. So that's a different thing, you know?
Right.
Which I'm happy to do. I'm not above that. So that's one of the main rules. The second rule and the third rule aren't hard and fast. That's the only one that's really hard and fast.
Right.
The second and third rule is just, you know, please make an effort to promote my stuff. Like tell your people, follow me on Facebook, follow them on Instagram, support them, join the mailing list. And then the third rule is if you decide to video and take photographs, that you just tag James in the right places. So, I mean, it's pretty laxed, and I think the business model will update as I move on. And so I'm doing this for a whole year. So what's cool about that is that, like, I can adapt, and, you know, I already have, like, I learned I got to be really explicit about this isn't background music.
Right.
You know, if you're hiring me for like a birthday party or a wedding or something like that, you don't just get like a free performance, you know? You know, going forward, I don't know. I made it free at the beginning because I thought that it would lower the barrier for younger people too.
Right.
And what I found is that, like, pretty much no one under the age of 30 has booked one of these shows. Maybe like two people, but it's been a totally different beast.
Why is that? Like, what do you think the difference is?
I'm not sure. I think it's just a where people are at in life, right? I think if you're like a little bit older, you've got a house, you've got a place to host, and you've got the type of friends that would come over for that kind of thing. I think it's just a speed difference, honestly.
Yeah.
You know?
It's weird because it's funny. Again, I'm putting my marketer hat back on. We talk about like millennials and they love experiences.
Dude, I'm all ears. Like literally, yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's like, oh, they love experiences. Let's give them this. But, you know, and sometimes we bust our own bubble. It's like, yeah. Oh, wait, I guess that wasn't the truth, at least in this case.
Well, that's just funny. I'm like, I feel like such a stereotypical millennial because I'm like, I don't care if I make money. I'm just interested in experience. Like, oh, God, you know.
Wow. But the visual. go ahead.
That's what you get to do in interviews. I do think it's really interesting. I'm like, because that's literally what I'm trying to do, just create these magical experiences for a little moment in time, you know, so that we can connect and create this connection that's off of Facebook and off of social media that's just like super surface and way more real. But yeah, it's I think that might be my, you know, my lack of marketing skills, I think.
Right.
Because I wouldn't say that I'm a naturally good marketer. I wouldn't say I'm a good self-promoter. I wouldn't say that, you know, I've got the marketing brain.
But what you did, you built a machine that kind of does it for you, right? It's every artist, and as many times as I've talked to on the show to people in the music business, I'm like, doesn't the artist just really want to be an artist, right? Yeah. Like, and not have to worry about, like, am I updating my social media? Am I, like, getting the right bloggers to listen?
Am I doing all this stuff? The dream. Like, literally, like, when people are like, where, what's your end game? I'm like, that's my end game. Like, just being able to show up and play and having somebody deal with all the administrative stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, people are always like, is your days are pretty chill, right? You just like kind of wake up at like 11 and like, you know, roll out of bed and like play a show at night and then repeat, right? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. You know, like, I'd say like 80% of my day is just fielding emails, routing, researching like venue opportunities, also just operating social media. Because if you're not on that all the time, people forget about you so fast.
Yeah.
Like, the key, I think, to social media is just being at the forefront of people's minds all the time. So you're just constantly, like, content, you know?
How much are you thinking about that as you're going about? Like, how much of it is second nature? And how much of it is like, oh wait, it's Wednesday and I didn't post since Saturday?
A lot of it, the latter, honestly.
Really? Sadly. It's a little bit more like the pressure of it, of doing it.
Well, I try to video these shows when I play them because I have this grandiose dream of making this into a documentary at the end of the year, because I think it could be good fodder for a documentary. But, you know, I'm videoing with my iPhone, so I'm like not able to upload anything to Instagram or Facebook. So, you know, like a couple days later, I'll be like, throwback Wednesday to the show, right. You know, and it's just like way back Wednesday, you know?
Exactly. It's like from 2010.
I'm like, Man Crush Monday. It's me. It's fun. It's me playing. Yeah. It's I find it super hard to stay on top of it. But at the same time, this tour is just like a content farm. I mean, the funniest things have happened. I helped this girl in Huntington Beach rip a stripper pole out of her ceiling.
Oh.
She couldn't get it out, and I had the right height and leverage and was able to yank it out for her, which is fantastic. So there's, you know, there's things like that, which I got on
height
video.
Height and leverage and yanking it out in stripper pole. That's quite a story.
This is a lot, right? I mean, yeah. This is still family friendly, right?
Let's get hashtags on the, like, just on the picture. Like, what did he do?
Love that interview, yeah. Yanking it out. But yeah, I mean, like that kind of stuff, you know, I have that in spades. And I actually didn't even video, like, I can't even get most of what happens. I walked into this one party and there was a Trump pinata and there were joints and constitutions flying out of it. I was just like, holy crap, like, where am I right now, right?
Was it pro-Trump or?
It was anti.
Oh, okay, all right.
That's what was hilarious. I mean, they're hitting this Trump thing. I mean, if it was pro, it would have been a different story. But it just snuck out and been like, but no, I mean, it's just, that's what I mean. Like, these things happen. I didn't even get that. I couldn't get that on video.
Yeah.
Because I was just holding all my gear, setting up, and just like jaw on the floor. Like, where am I right now, you know? And it's amazing, you know? The way, how different people's lives are house to house too, you know?
Does that affect your craft in any way? Like, get it in, and I think, you know, I almost look at what you said earlier at the beginning is like where you've lived. You lived in, you know, London and Italy, and you've lived in a lot of different places. Now you're going there and living temporarily. Y'all right there? I don't want you to.
Italy.
Stop drinking in the studio.
so many bottles here. It's super hard to concentrate.
Exactly. We popping bottles up in this motherfucker. now I lost my train of thought.
You said you lived in all these places.
Yes. And so now you're having like these intimate moments. Like, how has that affected your craft as you go on? And you like really learn what people are responding to in this intimate environment.
Yeah, I think it's made me more. I think it's made me more business minded because I've started to pick up what people respond to. Like, people really like sing-alongs. You know, sometimes I drop my pride and I feel super dorky doing the classic like super singer songwriter thing, being like, clap along with this song, guys. You know, but it, you know, at the end of the day, it's like I just want people to have a good time and enjoy themselves as much as. You know, as much as be able to play music for them. So it's a fun balance. But it's been really interesting to learn what people respond to. I think for a long time, I started off in electronica, which is weird. My musical career is completely backwards. I started off in techno, producing techno and trance. And, eventually picked up a guitar, learned how to play it, learned how to, like, sing a bit. And here I am now with an acoustic guitar. It's for a long time I threw all this production at stuff and I think people are really responding well to the acoustic thing, which is funny because like I still listen to like a ton of electronica. I just love that, like,
so when your van pulls up, it's like
yeah it's like and I'm just like, come out with an acoustic guitar, I'm like, I'm here. But yeah, I mean it's cool to do what I want to do, but also be doing market research. Like, again, this is stuff that like I don't do naturally, but I'm like, this is market research. Like I'm collecting data points, you know. Like,
well, look, it's funny. I participated in this like startup, you know, launchpad as a mentor.
Yeah.
And I sat with like 40 startups over 3 days and talked to them all. And I talked to the organizer at the end. I was like, you realize the majority of these founders have never met a customer. Right, they've never actually just sat down and like, yes, I built one of the best shopping apps in, you know, India, whatever. But I've actually never sat down and go like, hey, what do you actually like? What, you know, look at this texture on you, just to get a sense of like the human side of the business. And you get to experience that on at least 100 days.
Dude, that's so funny you bring that up, honestly, because, you know, again, like the day job was like primarily like UX and UI design, right? For iPhone apps and Android apps, right? So we're constantly speculating like the user's going to want to do this and we're going to cut out this step and this step. And it drove me nuts that we never just got people in a room and we're like, here, try this out. Let's see how you interact with this or talk to them. Like, what do you want?
What's the pain point for you?
Yeah, exactly. Totally. who's our core demographic? What do they want? Let's just solve problems in real time, you know? Again, it's like way faster to just get on the ground and do it. And maybe like fuck up a bunch, maybe do the wrong thing a bunch, instead of just speculating in a box forever, you know, and then just releasing a product that like is hit or miss, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the companies I worked with did that. It's just I noticed a lot of that in that world. Like, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of arguing, a lot of dick whacking, like, you know, a lot of, you know, just a lot of ego about, yeah. I know it's right. I think we should do this, and not a lot
because
of,
I have a phone.
Right. Yeah. Not a lot of like hardcore science, you know,
right.
at the core of it, I'm like, I'm somebody who just needs science. Like I need, you know, concrete facts
to
back
up. You need balance of both, right? You need gut, but you also need like, okay. Like I've actually seen this and it wasn't just from me in my head and like the people that live in my house. No, I feel like you're in this space where you're becoming you.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true.
What's that like? Because you talk about techno and UX design, and now you're like, you're just comfortable.
Well,
right?
I'm not to blow smoke up your ass, but you're actually asking, it's really good questions, because like, this is something I've been thinking
Thank
about
you.
A lot.
Thank
like,
you, James.
Like, no, I mean, I'm serious. Like, it's crazy you're hitting the nail on the head with that. Like, because I was driving a couple weeks ago. From Northern California to LA for a string of Southern California shows. And I it sounds like super hippy dippy, but I just felt so whole. And I was like, I was like, what is this feeling? Like, this is weird. I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I feel like I'm right where I need to be. And I don't know if I've really ever like felt that like whole before in terms of like what I was doing. You know, I have no fear about this working out. Like, my burn rate's so low, like you can't sink me, you know. Like, I'd have to you know, have my car totally blow up and all get mugged, and you know, for me to be financially sunk. So, you know, I have a safety net and this ability to do what I'm doing, and I'm traveling, I'm meeting people and playing music. Like, I really couldn't ask for much more. And people are always like, do you want to be famous? Like, what's your end game? You know, and I'm like, I don't really need that. Like, I'm not trying to be Justin Bieber, you know. I just
right.
I'd be
a weird Justin Bieber.
Yeah, I'd be a super weird Justin Bieber, old Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I just want to create a, I just want to be able to do this like full time, you know. And it was so weird for years; it just didn't click. And then this last October, when I decided to do this, I was like, it just totally made sense. You know, I was like, the math checks out. Like, it just makes sense. Hit the ground running. And so far, honestly, like, when you said name a bad experience, the one I mentioned wasn't even that bad.
Right.
Like, if that's the worst so far, I probably got one coming, you know? but you know, I mean, it's honestly, it's been like, I can't articulate how positive an experience it's been,
yeah,
and how surprising that is to me. Because, you know, I was like, there's going to be moments where I'm going to be in the middle of, like, Mobile, Alabama, playing for, like, you know, two people in, like, a small trailer. And it's just going to be us three. And it's going to be super awkward. And, like, you know, there's going to be these, like, these moments of, like, where am I? What am I doing? But even the bizarre moments are awesome.
Yeah.
They're new memories and they're things I haven't experienced before, you know? And that's what I think life's
about. No, it's fantastic. It's, you know, when I think about the audience that listens to the show, whether you're a CEO or an entrepreneur or individuals who are just kind of like trying to figure it out or trying to figure out the next level solution, there, I feel like you do hit this like, moment. If you're open, and I don't also mean to get hippy-dippy, but there
let's
just
do
like,
it.
there's a euphoria, you know, if you will, or a utopian feeling that we kind of ignore in the journey, like getting there. It's like, no, I got to do X, Y, and Z. I got to do these things. And I need, like, you know, when I deal with a client, it's what's the ROI? Experiment for a second, right? Like, set a new precedent for, like, what you did. You set a new precedent for yourself and for other artists, you know, that could probably do this.
Well, I think that's so funny. Like, it blows my mind in hindsight now how long I ignored the simplicity of just doing what I wanted to do and sitting down and figuring out how to do it properly, right? Instead of being like, you know, society tells artists, I think, society tells everyone, like, you need to make money. You need to, like, climb this rank. You need to climb this ladder in this job. You need to make as much money as possible. And people lose track of, like, why they even want to be successful, like, why they want to make money, you know? Like, what's the point if you aren't happy in what you're doing?
Right.
Like, I mean, again, this is stuff that people know, I think, instinctively, but, like, I ignored it for years. And I think that's what you're talking about is when people realize, like, this aha moment, like, holy crap, this is all I need, you know, to do what I want.
And it'd be in a sea of any, like, in, pick an industry. I don't care if you make rockets or screws or music. Like, there are thousands of you, right?
Totally.
And so in order to cut through the clutter, it's interesting how much individuality plays a role in the creative output. Again, if you're making screws or widgets or rockets, like, there's a creative output and there's you as part of that process.
Totally. And maybe I can ask you this question, like, given your expertise, but, like, I always had this feeling that, like, when you're going after a demographic, you're really just going after who, you know, you, yourself. You're literally just trying to find people who like what you do if your art is from you, you know? So, you know, for years, it's like, why try to please the people who aren't on board with what you're doing, right? Just find the people that like what you're doing, and it makes total sense. Like, if it's hard, if it's not fitting together, if it's like square pegs and round holes, like, it's probably not the right direction to go.
Well, I think there's definitely, like, a parallel between you, what you do, or a stand-up comedian, or, you know, a film studio, right? You're kind of making that product for that one person. You know, how many people are you making eye contact with when you're performing, right? Like, it's like, all right, I'm having an intimate moment with you right now. Any author who writes a book, I'm writing to one person. And so, yeah, we think mass. And I think the only thing about mass for me is, like, what is the common thread? And so what is the common, like, human truth, if you will,
right.
That, you know, we can satisfy with this beverage or with this title, the brand promise or whatever. Like, if you're brand statement is action trumps perfection, right? Like, everything you do will start to breathe that, whether it is, like, you know, your own flyers that you might do, and it's like, oh, it's kind of, anyway,
my own shitty flyer,
exactly. But you know, I released a lot of 80% like done stuff, because I'm like, just like as we were getting ready to set up the recording today, it's like, oh, you want me to go get a mic for the guitar? I was like, no.
Yeah, well, you gotta make those decisions, right?
Yeah,
because ultimately that time adds up, right? And, like, I think you realize, and, like, the, when you look back in the grand scheme of things, that, like, again, it's not like the, you don't remember, like, the tiny little moments, you know, it's the big picture.
Yeah.
So you get to a point where you're like, you got to make those decisions. Do I need this? Do I need to cut this out? Do I need to adapt? You know, it's just, I think it's the right way to move. And for a long time, I didn't. I got hung up on the minutia, you know?
Did you know that your Wikipedia page is wrong? It says you were born in 1767 and died in 1841.
That's actually not wrong, which is super weird. I don't know how if you've ever had a vampire on your show before, but I'm glad to be the first.
It's the first for everything. By the way, that was the first music performance.
Oh, was it? Yeah. That's awesome. God, I'm totally flattered.
Yeah, that was the first. I had a guy spit poetry.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Shout out to Sekou Andrews.
That's awesome.
Yes, it was pretty awesome. That is a true story. There's a James Landman from, like, history.
I know. The problem is that, and we're solving this right now, is that, like I said, I'm horrible at self-promotion. I have barely any press. I mean, I just started, you know, this year, kind of like January, this new solo thing.
But yeah.
This is the first press I've got. So first musical performance, first press. This is a lot of firsts. Hopefully I can update that Wikipedia page, be like, I was on Innovation Crew. Exactly. I'm legitimate, all right? Screw that lawyer from 17.
100 years later or whatever.
100 years later. It only took me 100 years to get press.
You seem like a student of the craft. You know, well-versed in techno, but you also talked about Lauryn Hill and doo-wop. You use the term neo-soul. And, like, you know, I think there's a every artist, all of us, I think, are like a collection of experiences and things that we've had. How much do you study your craft, or how much have you studied your craft?
Well, I'm self-taught. I don't know how to read music. I never went to school for music or voice. So, you know, that is... I think I could have done that better.
No,
honestly, like, I think I could have gone to like a proper school, because learning online or learning by trial and error is a super slow way to do it. But I think you learn things really well. You know, in terms of like genres and stuff, I think I kind of mentioned this at that party I played. But you know, we were raised with like our peers listened to like a lot of classic rock growing up. And you know, we grew up with like 90s hip hop, and then, you know, also our parents listened to like mostly like Motown and Nat King Cole. So like old jazz, right? So we missed out on that whole classic rock era. So what's funny about that Crazy Love cover is that someone asked me to play this Van Morrison song and I'd never heard it before. And this person was just appalled. And I was like, all right, I'll learn it for you. And that's become, you know, one of my kind of favorite covers to do. But yeah, like we were raised mostly on Motown. And it's funny is that my mom actually bought The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. She's the one who brought it into our home. So it's funny. Like, I remember coming home from school, putting my backpack down, and she would just be blasting that from, like,
your mom black?
No, I know. That's the thing.
Ass,
you know, that's the thing. It's like so
reverse different strokes.
It's so funny. I know, right? And she's just like this, like, little, like, suburban white lady, but she just loved Lauryn Hill. And she, you know, she's always had good taste in music. I mean, I think that comes from listening to Motown. I think anybody who appreciated that side of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, like, got where she was drawing from, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I think over time, you know, I started off as a DJ and into dance music. I think for a long time, people were like, you're too all over the place. You got to consolidate. And that's what I got hung up on for years. I was like, what's my sound? Like, what do I do? And then, you know, somebody kind of put it to me really simply. They're like, dude, your sound is just your voice. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what genre you're really doing. So when I cover things, I do a pretty wide range. And I like to think that maybe I have my own signature sound now. That's just, you know, I don't know the way I play guitar or the way I sing. But, you know, as far as production goes, it'd be cool to, I'd love to get like a happy marriage between electronica and like the old R&B sound. I think that'd be a killer mix.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. You know?
Now that's the van I don't mind pulling up.
Yeah, right?
Tell me about the van. Like what, like,
the van.
Like walk me through the van visually, as if I were a woman at one of your shows.
Okay.
And you're like,
all right.
Hey,
I'm like, you walk in, there's a rotating bed.
Exactly. There's a disco ball.
There's a disco ball.
The velvet painting.
You know, I literally bought the only van that I'd be able to stand up in, and that was Dodge Sprinter. It's used. I got it for, I think, $12,000. When I got it, it had belonged to a plumber out in Chicago. So it was super rusty. I spent the first month just kind of cleaning it out, de-rusting it, repainting it. And I built this platform inside. So it's got storage. It's got a 7-seater dinette where you could like raise the table up and sit around it. The dream was for me to be able to work and record in there from the road. I originally thought I was actually going to do graphic design on the road to stay afloat, but I haven't had to do that, which has been great. And then, you know, it also, the table comes down and forms a bed. So it's pretty Spartan, but what's funny is that I was living in New York up until October. So yeah. I feel like I got all the practice for living in a tight space.
I was about to say, it's probably the same size.
Yeah.
As
it's actually bigger than my Brooklyn apartment, which is super sad. I can do yoga in it. It's basically like the simple needs, and it's evolving. It's a work in progress, but the simple needs was I needed a place to sleep on the road because hotel costs are a big cost when touring. And I need a place to record. And, you know, I dreamed of midway through this, once I got the house concert thing done, just becoming this well-oiled machine and just cranking out covers and new songs from the road.
Yeah.
Again, just kind of like 80%, just like acoustic, live, shoot it out, see what people think. And I'm getting towards there. I have I'm learning how electricity works, which is pretty interesting. And I'm trying
the hard way.
Yeah, the hard way. Yeah, exactly. Don't mess with 12 volts. So yeah, I'm trying to rig it up so that I can get like my keyboard and my entire recording setup in there.
Were you a handy person before? Like, were you? I mean, building stuff and
I think I'm just
elevated tables. And
I think I'm just a student of the era where like I think if I could tell my younger self like I don't go to college, I could be like go on YouTube like learn. You can learn anything on YouTube. It's crazy.
YouTube University.
No, I mean we're not so far off from where people will be just learning things from free informational places.
So from a songwriting perspective, you told this pretty funny story about a song you wrote about an ex.
Yeah.
And then you performed the song and she was right there in the front row.
Yeah.
And didn't even realize the song was about her.
Yeah.
just tell us about your approach to writing. You know, and storytelling. Yeah.
So I think my approach to writing is I'll basically get a melody in my head. And I actually get a lot of melodies while I'm driving or walking. So this is actually a great time to write. And I will just turn on my voice memo recorder and I will hum the melody and it will end up being a chorus or a verse. Usually pretty hook-based. I think coming from techno and loop-based stuff, I kind of start with a hook, which for better or worse makes it kind of poppy. And then I will figure out the chords to go with it, and it's sort of a melody, like vocal melody first. It's very vocal centric music, I think. You know, I come up with the vocal melody first, come up with the guitar to back it, and then just lay a metric shit ton of harmonies over it. You know, but for the most part, I'll get a melody out of the blue while I'm driving. Sometimes I'll just be playing the guitar, and we'll be playing like a couple like seven chords, and a melody will come about. But yeah, for the most part, it's just kind of out of the blue. And I think I got like a little bit of OCD because I just hoard hooks. Like I have a phone full of voice memos. It's just all hooks,
nice.
You know? And I'm like, at some point I'm going to just like make myself go through each one and complete it. Cause like the fun part is coming up with that, you know,
yeah.
The hard part is finishing it. So I worked with this producer in Brooklyn and he made me finish like four of those hooks and they turned into the songs that I'm playing now. Basically four of the main originals I play are started off like that, you know? And he's like, you know, this isn't completed. Like I'm not producing this until you finish the song. So yeah, I had to like go through and like actually think through harmonies and it was a lot more intentional. And I think that taught me a lot. And now when I write, I'm still farming hooks, but, but when I get a free chance, I sit down and I'm like, all right, we're going to fully flesh this out. But it's a game of inches with most songs. That song that I played about the girl poured out of me. I think sometimes people talk about this where sometimes it comes super easy. And then sometimes it's just like a long, long game. You know, I have songs that have been in the queue, I guess, let's say for like 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, but that song, I think it's an inspirational thing. I think when you feel inspired, you know, it's easy when you have experience to draw from that's fresh. That can help too.
I think there's so many like parallels between like you literally as an entrepreneur and a traditional entrepreneur's journey. It is kind of write what you know. You may have a bank of ideas that you may not be able to get to for years.
Yeah.
And it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
And, you know, but at the end of the day, you like as long as you continue to take those steps, it's you're doing the right thing, right?
That's what the process is for, right? Like the actual making yourself go through the steps, right? When things aren't coming easily, I found that there are ways to move towards the right direction. I think as long as you're doing something, you're doing the right thing instead of just like shelving stuff and, you know, not putting it there. Sometimes I'll just do a little work like while I'm driving when I shouldn't be, you know. I'll be like listening to a voice memo and being like, okay, you know, well, actually, maybe I'll do like this chord here, you know. But I think setting up a process is important.
Even though
it's not as romantic as just getting inspired from the heavens and, you know, writing something. I think it's super important to like follow some kind of a process, some sort of an ordered way of.
It's like any athlete, right? You practice every day.
Yeah.
In some games, you score 40 points. In other games, you're like, oh, man, I didn't.
100%. Yeah.
That was awful.
Yeah, 100%. Totally. And not getting too hung up on those awful days, right?
Right.
It happens to everyone, right?
By the way, when I walk around, I freestyle a lot.
Oh, yeah?
But it's usually like really perverse stuff.
Done.
So we can walk around together and like,
yeah,
sound schizophrenic.
Dude, maybe I'll shoot you a song and be like, hey, lay down some flows over this.
Exactly. But I also like when I'm like, because it's almost slightly audible, so I'll round a corner sometimes.
I like
a mom and her little daughter. I'm like, yeah, nigga, suck my, hey, how you guys doing?
What's up? Hey.
Exactly. Hey, all right, little girl.
How's the,
right?
How's the weather? That's super funny.
So the show is called Innovation Crush. What have you seen, especially in your travels, that you are crushing on? You know, you've seen a stripper pole inside a pole. You've seen Trump. You've probably seen some cool technology, ate some good food. Yeah. You know, what have you seen that you're crushing on?
That's a good question. I think... just like the dynamic of people and their friends has been, I'm pretty fascinated by this. How different, how wildly different every single night is, you know, and just kind of seeing the type of people that certain hosts associate themselves tells a lot about them. I think that's a fun phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
Like you really are like the sum of all your parts. I think like Jen, you know, and Jim, like they're super
yep.
amazing people. And like everyone at that party was super nice that I played. It reflected, you know, they were so cool. It's so easy to talk to. But there's other parties where like the host is just like a totally different breed of character and their friends are kind of like that as well. And I always manage to find like one person at the party who, if I'm not vibing with anybody, I can just like single them out and we've, you know, formed these awesome relationships. Like I met this really cool photographer at one of the shows I played. She ended up shooting me in Long Beach like 2 weeks ago. So it's that, you know, I think I'm crushing on making new friends and seeing other people's, just watching other people's friends.
I love that because it's so analog. And I'm kind of like in the past couple months have just kind of been obsessing over analog. Like there was this group of coffee shops in New York that kind of collectively decided to get rid of Wi-Fi. And there's a really cool article that says an amazing thing happened. People started talking to each other.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
So true.
And to see people actually interact with one another and not. And see who they are really and not through one of these devices, right? Like it's well,
that's the other thing. Like this year, obviously, like politically, it's just been horrible. Like Facebook's turned into this feedback loop. It's unusable, like for personal reasons now, just because I think like it's impossible to ignore the train wreck that's going on and people keep posting about it. And then you also have just this division where people are like, you're an idiot. No, you're an idiot. And you don't get anywhere, and that's so frustrating. And I think that people would be less apt to call each other names and be less understanding. They'd be more sympathetic if they're in person.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this was also kind of born out of like, you know what, I'm just going to like get out there. And I'm going to play people who play people's houses who I don't agree with politically. And I won't always bring up politics or, you know, life events or whatever. But like, I just want to connect on one level because humans are not unidimensional, you know?
Yeah.
And I think people forget that on Facebook. Because on Facebook, you are, basically. You're like, this is what I believe. This is what I look like. This is my best angle, you know?
These are my duck lips.
Yeah, exactly. These are my duck lips.
This is the side shot of my behind.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, you know, people, again, this is something people say and we all know, but I think the world could do with more people just kind of getting out and making an effort to understand the other side or just talk to people, you know?
Yeah.
No matter how frustrating it can be.
I 100% agree with you. And I also, like, I'll take that a step further because I also think that people who do these anti-whatever blasts or pro-this is like, they think that they're making a difference, which isn't, right? You know, and there's a mistaken, I'll call it a mistaken identity where you're like, yes, I'm doing something because I talk about this every day. And you're like, no. Like,
armchair activism.
You're talking to the wrong people.
Yeah.
Your high school friends don't care.
No. It's like, yeah, good job. Way to save the environment. You
exactly.
Know?
Oh, look at the picture of this whale. The shot in the face.
Glad I did something
can
today.
Can you shoot a whale in the face? Is that shotgun?
I think so, yeah.
At least a beach one. I think that...
Oh, that's right.
You should be able to shoot a beached whale.
Yeah, you should be able to. If you can't, you're
bad. I'm going to post that on Facebook.
You're a bad marksman.
I'm for shooting beached whales in the face.
I'm for hitting fish in the barrel.
last but not least, complete this phrase for me. You ready? Yeah? No? You had to go oof before it.
I'm like, I got to think? I don't know. I didn't come on here to think.
You think naturally. You're a natural thinker.
Stream of consciousness.
Stream of consciousness. All right.
All right.
Three.
Let's do it.
Two. I'm using musical terms for you. Three, two. Innovation to me is
approaching ideas that already exist in an original way.
Boom! Let's hear you do it. pull that string stick out of. I don't know any legs.
Well, this is a banjo. Should I play that song I wrote, the skating song?
Whatever you want, yes. It wasn't that bad, though. You set it up like it was going to be like a 100% diss record.
I should probably write something meaner. I'm just not mean enough. I'm trying to learn that, too, on the road, how to be a bigger dick. But can I? Is it okay if I sing the original lyrics, sort of a bit more explicit?
Sure.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's fine. I love it, yeah. Because there were kids in the room.
It's funny, when there's kids in the room.
No kids in this.
Dude, do you want to hear me flow? Or like that's me when I'm trying to edit on the spot and I say
you
things
just
like.
You totally get lost and you're like, oh.
Oh, my God. I think I said that's the gist of it. It's the same old stuff. She hangs like smoke. I take a puff or something stupid. But yeah, basically, there's a part in the song that basically is like that. So this is called When You Left, and I haven't put this one out yet.
I woke up on a Sunday morning, another night gone by. I had too much, yeah, I burned it up. And I still woke with the light, arms over arms, legs over legs, night after night, and day after day. And when you left me, yeah, you went away as quiet as Sunday morning came. I didn't hear you leave, but I knew by then that you'd be way down 8th Avenue still. Still I found it strange how I fell under your spell, how fast a spell could fade, and will I ever know why? Seems every step you took put you farther from my mind, from my mind, from my mind, from my mind. Yeah, you got me, you really did, yeah. Had me up against the wall. And there's no one who will ever be safe from your gift for withdrawal. And it's arms over arms, and it's legs over legs, and it's night after night, and it's every single day. And when you left me, yeah, you went away as quiet as Sunday morning came. I didn't hear you leave, but I knew by then that you'd be way down 8th Avenue still. Still I found it strange, and I fell under your spell, how fast a spell could fade, and will I ever know why? Seems every step you took put you farther from my mind, from my mind, from my mind, from my mind. Well, that's the gist of it. It's the same old shit. She hangs like smoke. I take the hit, and then my hands fall to her hips, and just when I thought I was over it, she comes back around and she's out. Still I wonder why we fuck about, and if you're really happy now, we never said goodbye. Seems every step you took put you farther from my mind, from my mind, from my mind, from my mind, from my mind.
Yes. You're a pretty talented guy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
It's been a blast.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to make it. Where are you off to next?
I'm off to Phoenix, Arizona today.
Nice. Yeah. How many of these have you done yet? What are you, 30?
This is 29? A 32nd show now.
Nice. Up.
Yeah, so got 60 and counting on the books, and yeah, getting close to that 100 mark.
Well, where can people find you? We're going to find out more about what you're doing.
I think the best place would be www.jameslamon.com/about, and then they can kind of see the house concert thing, what I'm doing, the bio, and all that fun stuff.
Find no D in Landman, by the way.
Right, right, that's right. So it used to be Landman with a D, and then our ancestors lost their land, and they just snipped that D out.
Wow, you lose your land, you just take a letter.
That's a mnemonic. I made it up.
But wow, okay.
I think maybe they can just, yeah.
I think it's a good story.
Can I get a D? You know, just take the D out.
Pat Sajak. Sorry. Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you.